Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava Ki Jai, Grantaraj Sriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai, Jayanitai Gopurimanand. So what have we discussed in the last few weeks?
If the soul is envious of God, they can never surrender.
What is that in relation to?
Text 6 and 7.
Any other points? Yeah. Anything else?
Mantra is spoken only if it is received in the glorified discipline session. And Pritamana is just setting an example by taking initiation from Son of God.
Anything else?
Krishna is in Avatar. Discuss about taking that offer of Krishna.
There are four glorified sampradayas, and every person has to take initiation from one of them.
So we put the Mahamantra speaking in one of our spiritual masters, we've got potency, then we chant for the people in difficult situations.
And we start with the chapter, we got to ask five questions to the Mantra Rishi, and like we're going to explain, so I'll give the answers to these five questions to the Rishi.
Good. Anything else?
The audience is eager to hear, then the speaker is enthusiastic to talk about Krishna. Krishna is so relishable that neither does the speaker want to stop talking, nor does the other want to stop speaking.
In DC worship, one must follow the engineers of Krishna.
Lord is known as the Dakshana,
the topics about Krishna are so inspiring that both the writer and the hearer both are, they can never get exhausted.
Then who is the Yuvaracharya? Any other points?
Every glorious community, that's a Christian salvation.
The concrete is called learning, depends on both the student as well as teacher.
Hmm. Anything else?
The cycle of prosperity is discussed. The Kshatriyas have to look after their own protection. The Vaishyas have to bring grains from the beast, the Brahmana. The Brahmana have to perform the yajna. And then take care of the yajna. And by their perform the yajna, the prosperity is achieved.
Okay, so we'll continue with chapter 7 and 8. I have a special present for you, my dad, so I'll give you a copy.
This is the family tree of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it shows all the different lineages which go through the Bhagavatam, so you can see who is related to who. Who descended from her like that. So would you like a copy?
Can you have a soft copy also, Prabhu?
You can if someone knows how to make it. I don't know how to use computers, so I can't make it.
I thought that's good on
myself. I got this. I just wrote a copy. This is to save time and pass it on. Yeah, just take one copy and pass it on.
We could ask Chaitanya Prabhu. I'll ask him tonight. See if he can scan them or something. And then maybe put them in. Okay. 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 Then send it to Chaitanya, and then he can put it on the website. Yeah. Send it to him, and then he can put it on. Yeah. He can put it on the website. Does everyone have a copy? Do we have enough?
Will there be a question from this chat?
No, it's just for your interest. You have to memorize at least 64 of the personalities.
Thank you.
Does the managers have enough?
Is there any spare copies? Everyone has? Everyone got a copy?
No spare copies? Okay, that's good. Okay, so in chapter 17 we see that Maitreya describes Vidura asked about five qualities in relation to Maharaj Prithu, and the answer to these five questions will constitute the rest of the pastime up until the end of chapter 23 in regards to Prithu Maharaj. Right, so what are the questions which are asked?
Why he is angry at Mother Earth.
Why is he angry at Mother Earth, yeah.
Mother Earth is the chief of the cell.
Why does she take the shape of a cow?
Why did he steal the sacrificial horse?
Why did he steal the sacrificial horse?
What was the milking pot? What was the milking pot?
What was the milking pot? And?
What happened to the instruction of
Sanatkama? Okay. So now the pastime is beginning with Prithu Maharaj chastising Bhumi Devi, or Mother Earth. So we'll continue tonight and we'll see how Prithu Maharaj deals with Mother Earth and how he shows the example of being a perfect emperor or a perfect king of the world. Okay. So we'll begin from verse 18 and we'll go to verse 28 and next Monday we'll finish this chapter.
Can I ask a question? Vidura is asking such questions like why did Mother Earth took the form of a cow. Does that mean that he knows his pastime, but he still wants to hear the pastime from
him? Yeah, he may know the answer, or he may be inquiring.
No, but specific question like why did Mother Earth take the form of a cow implies that he knows the pastime, but just for our benefit, we need
to. Yeah, well, sometimes you may have heard the story previously. But then when you come to class, then you say, what was the details? Like that. So maybe he heard something like that. Or maybe he's just asking for our benefit so that we will. Okay. Addressing the great opulent King Prithu as the knower of religious principles and shelter of the surrendered, she said, please save me. You are the protector of all living entities. Now you are situated as the king of this planet. Did you write a Bible book?
The conscious
first
address to do as Dharma Jana, which refers to one who knows the principle of religion. The principles of religion dictate that a woman, a cow, a child, a brahmana and an old man must be given all protection by the king or anyone else. Consequently, Mother Earth took the shape of a cow. She was also a woman. Thus she appealed to the king as one who knows the principle of religion. Religious principles also dictate that one is not to be killed if he surrenders. She reminded King Prithu that not only was he an incarnation of God, but he was situated as the king of the earth as well. Therefore, his duty was to excuse her.
Hmm. So what points can we draw from this first verse?
Just like professional disciples when led by Guru Maharaj, kind of reminding his duties. Similarly, Mother Earth is calling Dharmajna. So then there is kind of respect of.
What else?
A woman, a cow, a child, and a brahmana is an old man should be saved in all stages.
Good. Anything else?
Well, that's possibly realized from the second tools. You have to correct from the second to save herself as well. She took the form of a cow, knowing well that King Prithu will not kill the cow.
We'll see if he kills her or not. Any other points?
To me, she reminds me of a typical human behavior. Like, I may have committed a mistake, and if I'm cornered, I say, well, I may have done it, but excuse me that you follow the you are a good person, you are a nice person, what do you excuse me for?
Any other point?
The situation is similar to when Mara Parikshit was trying to kill Kali, and then Kali also surrendered to him, and he said,
So the intricacies of Dharma are very difficult to understand. But one must learn from one's spiritual master as to what are the intricacies of Dharma. In other words, human beings must become well versed in what is correct and incorrect action. We must become daksha. Daksha means? Expert. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says this is one of the 26 qualities of the Vaishnava, the devotee. He must be daksha. Daksha means expert. We must understand what is to be done and what is not to be done, and we must be able to make a correct judgment and be able to instruct others according to what is instructed in the scriptures. So the scriptures state that one should never harm a brahmana, a cow, a woman, an elderly person, or a child. They are to be protected in all circumstances. However, one must know perfectly what is dharma, to know in what circumstances. These things may be, there may be clarity needed in relation to these personalities. So one has to become very expert. Otherwise, one will commit mistakes. Just like in this day and age, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, people do not understand what is right, what is wrong. And Krishna describes that religion in the mode of ignorance, people say what is wrong, that is correct. And what is correct, that is wrong. So they say religion is irreligion and irreligion is religion. Just like we see with the fanatical Islamic people, then they've driven the aeroplanes into the buildings and so forth, and they say this is religion. But it is actually, it is adharma. It is not religion. It is adharmic. It is irreligious. If one is to kill another person, then one must fight them in a fair battle. Not that you just to drive a plane into the building while everyone is unaware. Now, that is not Dharma. Like that. So, according to them, that is religion. That is the highest form of religion. They think they are attaining salvation. They think they are going to heaven through Swarga. But actually, according to Krishna, then they are going to Patala. They are going to hell. But they think they are going to heaven. So religion becomes irreligion. Religion becomes irreligion. And irreligion becomes religion. Right? This is mode of ignorance. Like that. So one must be able to discern. One must be able to understand what is actual correct behavior and what is incorrect, and instruct others accordingly. So Prithu Maharaj, now he is about to very expertly discuss with Bhumi Devi, because Mother Earth is saying that you should not harm me. But we'll see as the conversation goes by, then Prithu Maharaj is more expert. He says, actually you are irreligious and you deserve to be killed. He does not kill her, but he says you deserve to be killed. Like that. So we have to become very expert to know what is right and what is wrong. Just like in the modern world, no one will, or capital punishment has become very, how do you say? It has become very unpopular. But actually, it is Dharma. Right? If someone is killed, then they should be killed. That is Dharma. That is Manu Samhita. Manu is one of the great Mahajanas. He's one of the 12 great authorities, the Bhagavatam says. So if one kills, then immediately, killed. Not have to spend, just like in America, they have something like 1.5 million people in Pentridge, in the jail system, in the different jails and their prisons. 1.5 million people, something like that. Now, how much money does that cost per year? Right? It's millions of dollars, billions of dollars, like that, of wasted money. Right? If someone kills, immediately, what do you do? Come here, put your head down, take a sword, like that, finished. Right? No sentiment. Someone steals, put out your hand, like that. Right? This is the law of Manu. This is actually Dharma. If you do this, then the citizens will behave themselves. When the government is very strong, then it's much easier to control the citizens. When they are weak, citizens will do anything. Because you cannot kill me, and I'll be out of jail in a few years anyway. So there is no fear in the citizens. So therefore, the king must know what is Dharma. We are not sentimental. Capital punishment should be the standard of every government on the earth. Because that is the standard of Manu, the father of mankind. Now everything becomes, what is religion becomes irreligion. What is irreligion becomes religion. And everyone is very confused, and therefore we see there is chaos on the earth. Okay, so any points so far?
You have the Arab countries still follow this.
Is that?
Arabic countries, they follow this religion.
Yeah, and people are much more well behaved. They don't have as much problem with crime and...
For the thief, they cut the hand in front of public.
Yeah. Same system. Even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it mentions that Maharaj Prataparudra was, for someone who had performed some sinful activity, they were going to kill them in public. So even back 500 years ago, in Mahaprabhu's time, this was still the system. Like that. Now it has become, most places in the world does not have. Any other points? The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. I am very poor and have not committed any sinful activities. I do not know why you want to kill me. Since you are supposed to be the knower of all religious principles, why are you so envious of me, and why are you so anxious to kill a woman?
I appeal to the king in two ways. A king who knows religious principles
cannot kill anyone who has not committed sinful activities. Apart from this, a woman is not to be killed, even if she does commit some sinful activities. Since the earth was innocent and was also a woman, the king should not kill her.
Hmm. So what do you think?
Question. How this situation is different than what Parikshit Maharaj encountered when Kali started showing his effect. Because why one would give blames to the earth when people are not cultivating, for example. So, as an earth, it's her responsibility to provide the facilities, but ultimately the endeavor should be done by human beings.
No, but that's Maharaj Preacher's point, is that the human beings are doing their dharma. Their work, Prabhupada's from the purport, everyone is working hard, everyone is following Varnashram, but still she is not giving appropriately. So it seems there is some fault on Bhumi's behalf. So any other points? It's not mentioned at this point. In this section it's not mentioned as to why. It says she is not. Well, that Preacher Maharaj says she is not. Anything else?
It's difficult to comprehend why earth would do that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense, but for some reason there's some discrepancy there at this point. Maharaj Preacher was angry. So. Did you have a point?
Srila Prabhupada, in his comment in the last line, he is already proclaiming that the Mother Earth was innocent. I don't know what did the Prabhupada make a mistake on that.
In this purport?
Yes, the last one. So that since the Earth was innocent, it's only Mother Earth who is saying I'm innocent, but the king does not say yes, she is innocent. The arguments are still going on.
Yeah, so she is saying that I'm a woman and I'm innocent, so therefore why are you killing me? Like that. But in Maharaj Preacher, he gives clarification as the verses go on. So once again, the women as a class, sometimes they may do something wrong, but still they will not be heavily punished. Women are protected by Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is easily pleased and easily angered. So he personally takes control of the women. Sometimes they will do things that cannot be explained. Men understand this. Sometimes we cannot understand something the woman may do. But that is the nature of the woman. Sometimes it is like that. Especially the very little women. The 2-year-old or 3-year-old women. Sometimes they do things we cannot understand. Obviously. But the point is that they should not be heavily punished. That is their nature. When a man does something, when a man does something which is wrong, then the punishment on the man will be much more severe. But when it comes to a woman, if she acts improperly, then the punishment will be less severe. Because that is their nature. The nature is they may act sometimes a little irrationally. So therefore the punishment will not be as strong. Like that. So then, Bhumi Devi, she is arguing in this way, that I am a woman, I've not done anything wrong, so then why are you willing to punish me? Any points?
Within the men also, Yudhishthira Maharaj says that depending on the Varna.
Hey. Brenda?
Yeah, Yudhishthira Maharaj was trying to avoid the punishment. He says, depending on the varna of the person is, whether he is a brahmana or a shudra, accordingly he gets the punishment for the same activity the person does.
Yudhishthira
says?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so if a sudra commits something wrong, then we will not punish as heavily as a brahmana or kshatriya does, then they'll be heavily punished. Yeah, the portal.
But we see that nowadays women are also doing very simple activities, and they're like, you know, the shuttlecock we gave, and she was going to be given capital punishment. We see that, you know, although the government doesn't, you know, sometimes mean correctly, but still there's no discrimination that they have between women and men.
Yeah, so Preetam Maharaj answers this a little bit further along. He says if they do very bad things, they should be punished. We're talking about just day-to-day things. You know, some little offence is not so bad. Like that. But if something's serious, then Preetam Maharaj says then punishment should be given, regardless of one's caste or one's sex. Any other point? Even if a woman does commit some sinful activity, no one should place his hand upon her. And what to speak of you, dear King? You are so merciful, you are a protector, and you are affectionate to the poor. The cow-shaped earth continued, my dear King, I am just like a strong boat, and all the paraphernalia of the world is standing upon me. If you break me to pieces, how can you protect yourself and your subjects from drowning? So, Gokula Rani, Matthew, can you please?
He makes the entire planet resisting to go to water, or wishing it to flow from this go water, and coming back to it, so I can grow. And all the planets within the universe are floating in the air, being supported by this logic stem. If the planet is destroyed, it must fall into the water of Sarkar. The earth, therefore, warns completely that it could gain nothing by destroying her. Indeed, how would he protect himself and his citizens from drowning in the other water? In other words, outer space may be compared to an ocean of air, and each and every planet is floating on it just as a boat or island floats on the ocean. Sometimes planets are called seacup or islands, and sometimes they are called boats. Thus, the cosmic manifestation is partially explained in this lesson by the cow-shaped door.
So anything here of interest?
Here we have two powerful people. Preetam Maharaj is the protector of the principles of religion, and the earth is not an ordinary. She is also going to be empowered living entity. The offense that an ordinary living entity commits is quite different from what physical earth would do. So the Bhagavan creates a situation of an extreme, and it sets an example between one extreme. So it brings two extreme personalities together to really drive a point in disciplining the lesson. If an ordinary king were to punish some, say, you know, just knowledgeable Brahman or, you know, whatever, it's a different situation. But here is incarnation of God, and here is basically, you know, just Bhumi Devi. So it's a beautiful, you know, play basically going on between the two extremes. So the point which comes out, actually, as a result of this drama, we'll be able to actually digest this.
Like you said, more
visibly easily. It's a very strong example. Hmm. Excellent point. Any other points? Similarly, in second chapter, Gopinath Panai, what I was saying on Chandra, he was going to tell the king, by killing this person, they are not going to get money back. Okay, they are like, in just one way, it's very easy.
Yeah. Any other points? So we have a description of the universe. All of the planets are floating within outer space. And at the bottom of this universe, half the universe is filled with the water of the Garbha ocean, where Garbhadaksha Vishnu is laying. When he enters into each universe, when Mahavishnu expands into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and he enters into each universe, then when he is laying within the universe, he becomes hot from being entrapped within the universe, and he begins to perspire. And his perspiration fills up half the universe, and that is the Garbhadaka ocean, or the Garbha ocean. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he lays down on Anandasesh on this ocean, and then from his navel comes the lotus flower, in which all the different planetary systems are situated. We see, just like at the farm, you see very clearly at night time, when there's Amavasya, when there's dark, when you can see the Milky Way. And Prabhupada describes the Milky Way as the lotus stem of coming from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And at the top of the lotus stem is Satya Loka, or Brahma Loka, where Lord Brahma lives. So, now Bhumi Devi, she is arguing that if you kill me, then I will fall out of orbit, and I will crash into the Garbhodaka ocean, and yourself and all your citizens will drown. This happened once before, when Lord Varaha Devi had to come and rescue the earth, and bring the earth out of the Garbha ocean. So she is arguing this point, that better you don't kill me, otherwise I will fall into the earth, into the ocean. And if I'm in the ocean, then all of you will be in problem also. So Maharaj Prithu, you guys relate to that? Okay. What's our sixth principle of our Bhakti Vaibhav course?
Anyone gets a mobile call, you should pay $10 to the plan. This I tell to my students.
Okay. Please turn off your mobile phones before you come in. No? At least give us the respect of village cinemas. If you go to the movies, they ask you to turn the phone off. So. At least if you go to the Bhakti Vaibhav class, you should have the same etiquette. Please turn it off. Okay. So, Maharaj Prithu will answer Bhumi Devi in a few verses and describe, counter her argument about her falling into the ocean. King Prithu replied to the earthly planet, "My dear Earth, you have disobeyed my orders and rulings. In the form of a demigod, you accepted your share of the yajñas we performed, but in return, you have not produced sufficient food grains. For this reason, I must kill you."
The cow-shaped earthly planet submitted that she not only was a woman but was innocent and sinless as well. Thus she argued that she should not be killed. Besides, she pointed out that being perfectly religious minded, the king could not violate the religious principles that forbade her killing a woman. In reply, Maharaja Pusuk informed her that first of all she had disobeyed his orders. This was her first sinful activity. Secondly, he accused her of taking her share of the yajñas or sacrifices, but not producing sufficient food grains.
So what are the points of interest?
How can you choose on the part of a, you know, such religious thing, to give this capital punishment to a woman who is trying to be protected? There is no opportunity here to make any amends or to improve or to apologize or to, you know, just kill. No, just kill.
Yeah, because you're talking about feeding an entire planet, so it's a great breach of responsibility.
Just given an opportunity, I mean, the mother earth can come back and say, "Yes, I understand, I made a mistake. I vow that I will not just kill any of the parents away." There you go. But not just kill.
Yeah, well, you have to understand that she's supposed to be feeding every human being on the planet, billions of people. And besides that, as Prithu Maharaj points out, then they have been performing their yajñas very punctually and properly, and everyone is working hard and performing their Varnashram duties, and still, so he's very angry at this point in time. Anything else?
How the earth planets taking share of yajna, because it is given to Lord Vishnu?
No, because when the yajñas are performed, all the devatas come. Remember in the Daksha yajna? And then Vishnu came, Brahma came, Shiva came, and all the demigods come. So they all received their share of the sacrifice at that point.
So where does earth come in what?
She is a devata. She's one of the demigoddesses. Anything else?
Can we draw the parallel, Prabhu, that we are taking our share of yajna from the ISKCON movement and we are not returning back in terms of preaching the same to outsiders, and then we are committing a sin or a mistake in one sense. We have taken our portion, but we can't in return we are not giving anything back.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that in the next couple of purports. There's one purport where Prabhupada addresses that point. Well, that's good. So, Preacher Maharaj is pointing out that we are always dependent upon our superiors. That is Vedic culture. Vedic culture is based upon being dependent upon our superior personalities. Bhumi Devi, she is the protectress of the entire human society. If she does not produce grains, then the entire society becomes in trouble. Yeah? Another word means they become distressed. Yeah? Everyone becomes affected if earth does not produce enough grain. Like that. So therefore, now this is the Vedic culture. That the superiors have the responsibility to maintain and to protect everyone under their jurisdiction. Therefore, it is mentioned within the Bhagavatam, do not become a father, do not become a mother, do not become a husband, do not become a teacher, a guru or a demigod, unless you can deliver your dependence in the cycle of birth and death. Right? You have a great responsibility. So if one takes the position of being a superior, that is Vedic culture, you must live up to the responsibility. You must fulfill all the spiritual and material needs of your dependents. So it is a great responsibility. So therefore it says do not become. If you cannot fulfill your responsibilities, then do not take up the role. Do not take up the position. So Bhumi Devi, she has a very significant position, but she is not living up to that position. So Prithu Maharaj is saying, as a Kshatriya, he's saying, if you do not live up to your responsibilities, then I will fulfill these responsibilities. Just like in the 10th canto, there is a pastime where Arjuna goes to Dwarka. And while he is in Dwarka, then one Brahmana comes and says to Krishna, he says, what is wrong in this kingdom? That one of my sons has died before his father. Because he had several children, and each time the child was born, the child would disappear. The child would leave untimely. So, Arjuna, when he heard this point, he said, then what is wrong with the Yadu dynasty? That whoever lives in their kingdom is not protected. Therefore, if you cannot protect them, then I will protect them. So as a Kshatriya, this is the way a Kshatriya feels. A Kshatriya feels, if another Kshatriya cannot do the job properly, then I will do it. Right? If this leader cannot do the job properly, if he cannot protect everyone, then I will do it. That is the responsibility of the Kshatriya. So if you have the responsibility, if you have any responsibility, then you must take care of the material and spiritual needs of your dependents. So if you become a leader in ISKCON, then you have that responsibility to look after the spiritual and the material needs of your dependents. If you become a leader of a family, then you have that responsibility, the material and spiritual needs of your dependents. That is our position. And if you become the emperor of earth, then that is your responsibility. Any points? Okay. Although you are eating green grass every day, you are not filling your milk bag so we can utilize your milk. Since you are willfully committing offenses, it cannot be said that you are not punishable due to your assuming the form of a cow. Yogeshwara.
A cow eats green grass in the pasture and fills the milk bag with sufficient milk so that the cow and its men can milk. Yajna's sacrifices are performed to produce sufficient clouds that will pour water over the earth. So, water, prayer, or fire can refer both to milk and to water. As one of the demigods, the earthly planet, was taking her share in the yamte. That is, she was eating green grass, but in return she was not producing sufficient food grains. That is, she was not filling her milk bag. Ritu Maharaj was therefore justified in threatening to punish her for her offense.
Any comments?
Interesting point is this offense. So she is making offense knowingly. Because you might commit offense without knowingly, unintentionally, but this is a willful offense. So that's more for punishment.
I'm not able to understand his logic. Says that she has been eating grass, but she just turned into a cow before when he was shaving her. So how she would have been eating grass? Maybe, I don't know.
You have to wait for the exam. We'll test your understanding. In a fresher situation. So it's an allegory.
Okay. The whole thing has to be understood in that way.
No, this example, because the parallel has been drawn. That the demigods accept their oblations in the jagya, they accept their part of the sacrifice, and then they are meant to give in return to those who are dependent upon them. So a cow takes grass, but then she's meant to give milk in return. So he's drawing this comparison. You're taking the shape of a cow, right? You're taking and you're not giving. And now you're trying to act like you're a cow. A cow takes and gives. So what sort of a person are you? You're acting like you're a cow. The cows take and then they give. So what is your position? You're taking, you're accepting our offerings of sacrifice, but then you're not feeding the citizens. So what is your position? Does that make sense? Anything else?
So this entirely talks about the people who are in respectful leadership positions where they accumulate the wealth for the people and don't distribute them. So they commit big offense by becoming that interlink in the whole process. And that reminds me of a quotation. Money is like a manual. To keep it at one place, it sticks. And if you spread it, it's malicious and makes other people close.
What is the example?
Money is like manure.
Manure?
Manure.
Oh, manure, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you keep it at one place, it sticks.
Mm.
And then just to keep it with yourself, that's just part of your use. And if you spread it, it helps in growing and nourishing other people.
I've never heard that one before. From India?
Western.
From the Western? What?
Western India.
It's from India?
You were saying Western, you're saying India, so I combined Western.
You think that's right?
So you're given here as an obvious call, so is it true if a call is not giving a means, so is it ideal to fill a call?
That will be answered in the next few purports. Prabhupada addresses that point. Okay.
Actually, this verse in the purport authenticates the whole, basically, science behind actually doing the yajna and offering the sacrifice. And Bhagavatam actually strengthens our faith that the science of basically, you know, the sacrifice is quite authenticated. If you are performing the sacrifice under the instruction of a proper Brahmana and you offer your share, and you have the result. And if basically, you know, the demigod commits an offense by not giving you basically the result, then he will be punished by basically the supreme person. So I think it's a wonderful point.
So it has been described here that the responsibility of the government is to make sure all of the citizens do not go hungry. And that is why the world's governments are failing in this day and age, because there are too many hungry people on the earth. As we've said in the last several classes, the figure is 1/4 or 1/6 of the earth's population goes hungry, goes to bed hungry every night. This is inexcusable. It is inexcusable for the governments to be acting in such a way. There is no excuse why there should be any hungry person. The United States military budget alone is enough to liquidate the debts of most third world countries. So it is just a misuse of wealth, misappropriating the wealth. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that within 10 miles of any ISKCON temple, there should be no hungry people. Because Prabhupada saw the government cannot do the job, then we will do the job. If they cannot organize to feed the people, then we will feed the people. So this should be the system. The government should take responsibility and make sure there's no hunger. Hunger is very inauspicious. It is very bad karma to become hungry. To live in poverty is very bad karma. Actually, Chanakya says that if one is in poverty, it breeds all bad qualities. Even a good person, if he's made to live in poverty, he will develop bad qualities, inauspicious qualities. We see very good people, but then when they go into poverty, then they become dishonest. It's unnatural. It's not natural for a human being. Consider very negative karma. So therefore, it is the responsibility of the king to tax the citizens and then to keep that wealth within the treasury so that at times of need, everyone can be automatically taken care of. That is a response. And I read one email today from Food for Life Global, where Priya Vrataprabhu, my godbrother, then he is saying that they are feeding the people in Haiti, where they had the earthquake. And he said, still, there's so much to do. So he's appealing worldwide. He said, please, all the devotees, please offer something so that we can continue in our efforts to feed the people. Like that. Actually, this is the government's responsibility, but if they do not do it, then Hare Krishna Food for Life will do it. If they will not do it, then we will do it. But that is the responsibility of the government. No one should be hungry. There should not be any famine, any drought, any distress, anything unnatural. You see, in the times, if you look in the Bhagavatam, in the time of Yudhishthira, in the time of Parikshit, in the time of Lord Ramachandra, there was none of these things. The citizens, it describes already in the time of Maharaj Prithu, the citizens did not understand what was distress. It says in Lord Ramachandra's time, the rain only came in the night time. But everything is upside down now. And this is because the government is impious. When the government is impious, then everything else becomes erratic within society. Any points?
So, coming back to your comment when Chanakya says, towards the, like the fertile ground for all the inauspicious and bad qualities for a person. So, if we hear the story of Bhakti Tirth Maharaj, he had such a troublesome and hard childhood, so much in poverty, he was always playing games of him. So, when he completed his graduation from, I think, from Princeton, so, that time he would have really harvested all his previous things and really made a big impression in terms of economics. But then he still chose to surrender his life and still live that very simple life. And I could not stop thinking about that humility for him. Because I know many people who have gone through that bad part and then when their time comes, they really make the best out of it. But it was his example, we see it's very hard touching for him. Except for his time, but again he surrendered and just like a simple person. Is that competition and limitation for now who love them?
Because you see everyone else he was living with, their bad qualities came out. He said that when he was a child he had to carry a gun. When he was a teenager. Just to walk around his
neighborhood, he had to carry a gun just to walk around his neighborhood. That's how dangerous it was. So, such bad qualities in the people. But he did not develop those qualities.
So his mother contributed a lot. He was very fortunate to have a good mother. His mother contributed a lot. He always inculcated the habit of not sharing. He had one dress or two dresses, and that somebody threw a rope on his mother, which is very important.
Yeah. And because he was such an extraordinary person, that he developed good qualities. Whereas others, if they went through the same thing, they would develop more negative qualities. Okay. Any other points?
I really asked him, you said that wealth in this world is evenly distributed. Every person will be at least having $1 million.
Yeah. Every man, woman and child. And $1 million is enough.
More than enough.
Enough. Okay. Any other points?
Prithu Maharaj is able to go ahead and chastise the earth king. So is it because he also the supreme personality of God, or every king during those times had this power to actually, you know, run the end of earth?
No, he had the power to do this. It's said in these verses, he is the King of Kings. Not any ordinary king could do this, but someone, he's a Shaktivesh avatar, so he has the power of God to do like that. So he describes that himself in the next few verses.
There's a theory in economics that refutes the communist thinking. If you take all the money from all the people and then distribute them equally, just in a matter of time, the money will get back into the same pocket. So, what they're trying to emphasize is, you will never have more than what you deserve.
Hmm.
So, artificial equality will never work. So, if you relate this with our thinking, they say that we have four level of people in the society. So, they are there for a reason, because not everyone is equal. And to treat them equally in that sense will not work.
Okay. You have so lost your intelligence that, despite my orders, you do not deliver the seeds of herbs and grains formerly created by Brahma and now hidden within yourself. Mahatma Prabhu?
While creating all this natural universe, Lord Brahma also created the seeds of his grains, herbs, plants and trees. When sufficient water falls from the cloud, the seeds fructify and produce fruits, grains, vegetables, etc. By his example, Prithu Maharaj indicates that whenever there is scarcity in food production, the head of the government should take steps to see why production is being held up and what should be done to rectify the situation.
Twenty-four. 23. Can you translate yourself first? This is based upon... Okay. I was reading my notes, but I was one verse ahead of myself. So I was commenting on the verse which was ahead of it, but that's okay. So any points in this?
So what are qualities, auspicious qualities and the offerings that we are given from Lord is for a reason. And if we don't cooperate with Lord's desire in fulfilling his objectives through us, in due course of time it will be taken back. So here Mother Earth is given all these things, but now she is not cooperating with the people to whom it belongs. So if you are not passing your Christ where it belongs, and you're not playing a part in facilitating Lord's desire.
Yes, good point. Now, Prabhupada brings this point out in this section of the Bhagavatam that the purpose of performing jagya is to develop selflessness. Because the nature of all the living entities in this material world is that they are selfish. You see, all the people in modern society,
they are accumulating wealth, but primarily the accumulation of wealth is for themselves. So it is selfish consciousness. Whereas when we perform jagya, right, then it means that whatever wealth we accumulate, a portion of that wealth is used to worship the Supreme Lord in sacrifice. So automatically you become selfless. Especially as a grihastha, then it is said the religious principle for a grihastha is a dan. Dan means he must give charity. Just like in your home, then you have the deities of the Lord. Now, you use your wealth to worship the deity, right? To worship the Thakur, or the master of the home. Right? And in this way, you purify your consciousness, you purify your wealth, and you become selfless. That is the whole principle of offering the bhoga to the deity. Before we eat in our home, right, then we construct the plate for the Lord and we offer the bhoga to Him. Right? Now you develop in your consciousness the sense of selflessness. Right? As opposed to modern society, you cook something and then you taste it while you're cooking it and then you eat it. Or you go out to the restaurant. Why do you go to the restaurant? For yourself. Like that. Not thinking, is this food offered to Krishna? So the entire consciousness of offering the bhoga to Krishna, to the deity in the home, is to develop a selfless mentality. This is bhakti. So we should be very conscientious of how we offer the bhoga to the deities in the home. The offering should be done in as nice a way as possible. It means that we must take the time to offer the food to the deity. Just like quite often you see the grihasthas, they will offer the bhoga in front of the pictures or in front of the deity, ring the bell, and practically as soon as the bell is finished ringing and you've said the mantras, then take the plate off again. Right? Krishna hardly even had time to taste it. Right? It takes you longer to eat. For yourself you will take the time, but for Krishna you will not take the time. So you have to do the offering in nice consciousness, in proper in devotional consciousness. This develops selflessness. So this is the point of doing yajna. That's why in the Vedic civilization everyone was taught to perform sacrifice. Yajna means sacrifice. By sponsoring the yajna you become selfless. Therefore, for grihasthas, you must give in charity. If you do not get given charity, you will become selfish. Then you will think you are the Purusha. You think everything is meant for your enjoyment. Aham mameti. Yeah? But we must develop the opposite consciousness. I am Krishna's servant, and everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna is the proprietor of the home. Everything is meant for His pleasure. This is bhakti. Like that. So Maharaj Prithu is emphasizing this point to Bhumi Devi. Everyone is offering to you, but you're not offering back. What is your consciousness? So, any points?
In Western world, we do have people who do not have this consciousness, but they do a great amount of charity, like Bill Gates. He has given us a huge wealth.
Yeah, but how much has he got?
He has given almost one third of his amount recently in India for like $10 billion.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much for him though. No, I mean I understand your point, but if you look at how much is still left, it's not, you know.
But still, is the biggest non-profit of our time.
Yeah, definitely. So So the point is that sacrifice or charity purifies the consciousness. Even a non-devotee understands that. By being selfless, then you feel purification of the consciousness. Yeah? And that can make one more... it can make one more qualified to come to bhakti. Just like when I used to distribute books on the street, then quite often when I would ask someone, are you from Melbourne or from another place? No? And then they would stop and say, I'm from Melbourne, can I help? So quite often the people who would stop were nurses. Because automatically they're used to being selfless. They're used to helping others. And then that becomes a qualification to engage in bhakti. So giving charity even for materialistic people. Krishna mentions this in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Krishna mentions that at least you should do something for others. Even if it's not bhakti, but still be selfless. Give some charity, do some sacrifice, and in this way it purifies the consciousness. Any other points? Okay, now we'll read the next purport. This is verse 25. Now, this is a very interesting purport. A very topical point, so you may find this point interesting. Now, with the help of my arrows, I shall cut you to pieces, and with your flesh satisfy the hunger-stricken citizens, who are now crying for want of grains. Thus I shall satisfy the crying citizens of my kingdom. Jagannath Ramprabhu, can you read the first paragraph?
Here we find some indication of how the government can arrange for the eating of cowfish. It is here indicated that in a rare country when there is no supply of grains, the government may sanction the eating of meat. However, when there is sufficient food, the government should not allow the eating of cow's flesh just to satisfy the bacterial demand. In other words, in rare circumstances, when people are suffering for want of grain, meat eating or flesh eating can be allowed. But not otherwise. The maintenance of slaughterhouses for the satisfaction of the funds and the killing of animals unnecessary should never be sanctioned by a law.
So what are the points here?
Understand that the life of a human being is much more precious than the life of an animal. So in extreme situations, to avoid the life of, to maintain the life of a higher being, justifying the killing of.
So it is only in rare circumstances that we can eat flesh, right? If there's nothing else to eat, then you can eat flesh. Otherwise, it is not permissible for human beings. Right? So we'll see in our lifetime if we ever come to this point. At least up until now, there's been nothing close to that point where we've had to consider eating flesh. But we'll see if it may happen or not. The point may come where we may have to eat flesh, but it's only in a very emergent, it is only in an emergency situation. Prabhupada says that it cannot be done unrestrictedly. Just like these days, they organize mass slaughter of the animals. Organized slaughter of the animals. 6 billion people on earth, 7 billion animals slaughtered every year. One animal per human being, higher than one animal per human being. Yeah. And people are wondering why there is such severe karma coming onto human society when there's so much bloodshed on the earth unnecessarily. So Prabhupada is saying here that the only permission that you have, according to the Vedic injunctions, to eat flesh is in an emergency situation when there are no grains. Right? There are no grains. Grains are the food for human being. That's where we get our energy from. So when there are no grains, then you can take some flesh. But otherwise, we're not permissible. Right. So, anything? Any other points?
So if someone is fishing in a province like, basically say, or in the Siberia, where no grains grow, purpose is to stay in such a vehicle to spread Krishna consciousness, and the only way he can survive is eat the fish, which is a very special food there. Does this purport sanction?
If you're in Siberia preaching, you have nothing to eat, then go to the ISKCON temple and they'll give you prasad.
I'm basically saying that the ISKCON temple doesn't exist.
The what?
What do you do? I'm actually saying that, there is no ISKCON, temple, and there are no
Indra Jumna Swami preaches in Siberia, like that. At this point in time, it's not necessary. It's only when it's necessary, when there's no choice. You'll know when there's no choice because it means there is no choice. Mm-hmm. But up until that point then, it's not permissible. It may happen in the future, but up until now it has not taken place. There's no shortage of grains on the earth like that. They're just not being distributed properly, and that's the problem.
So, yesterday they were sleeping hungry and all that. So, during that, are they committing offense if they are trying to eat, or it's okay for them?
If there's no grains, then you eat flesh at that point. Like that. So, if they have no grains, then there's no reaction for them to eat the meat, but not otherwise.
I was just reading Shankarshanath Maharaj's email. Somebody asked if he lives in Alaska, where basically it's all snow there, snow and ice. So what do the people eat? And Maharaj very nicely sent a picture of a man standing, and the cabbage was as tall as the man. He said 80 kilo cabbage. So he said that even in Alaska you can have cabbage. So I presume that there will be some sort of arrangement in Siberia as well to have something. And he also mentioned that in those areas, because they have 6 months of sunlight and 6 months of no sunlight, they can grow food nicely, and basically practically everyone has very nice garden. So they can grow their own vegetables.
Yeah. In Canada we have one farm called Sharanagati, and for 6 months a year the devotees can grow food there. So they grow enough food and then they put it underground, and then when it freezes over, everything stays preserved, and then they eat all the supplies during winter. And for 3 months they cannot get off the farm because all the snow covers the roads and they're stuck there. So they just light the fires, right? They take the frozen supplies and they read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Not so bad, huh? Not so bad. At least we don't get snow in an underground. We still don't come.
We can learn this activity even from an insignificant living in, like ants during the winter season, during summer and all, it collects the food items, stores and so on, and then during winter it consumes. So why not human beings with higher intelligence can't do that?
Same system.
So, Gaurang Prabhu actually gives a very hilarious example in one of his lectures where he is talking that if you are in a desert and you have a box of carrots and you have a goat with you and your brother, there are three things. So, what would you go for first? Obviously, the box of carrots, and then if they finish, then maybe look at the goat, but then don't start arguing your brother to as well, because I mean, you want to do least damage, which is why you should get that goat. So he was giving a sequence.
Did you make the right choice? What was that?
First brother, because brother is the goat.
Okay. So Prabhupada says at the end of the second paragraph, if there were one government on the surface of the earth to handle the distribution of grain, then there would be no question of scarcity, no necessity of to open slaughterhouses, and no need to present false theories about overpopulation. So this was the previous state of affairs. The earth was ruled by one emperor, by one monarch. And because he was ruling, then there was no scarcity. He made sure that every place on earth had ample supplies and ample food. It is just a matter of proper organization. So Prabhupada is indicating here that the best way to organize the earth's political situation is to have one government. And one government can make sure all the countries are acting properly and that everyone is receiving enough supplies. Okay. Any cruel person, be he a man, woman or impotent eunuch, who is only interested in his personal maintenance and has no compassion for other living entities, may be killed by the king. Such killing can never be considered actual killing. So now, Maharaj Prithu is mentioning that even a woman may be killed if she is a murderer. If she is also killed, then she may also accept capital punishment. If a woman is killed or is responsible for the death of others, she may also be killed. So Maharaj Prithu is very angry, and he's saying to Mother Bhumi, to the earth, I will not protect you, because there are so many people depending upon you and you're not looking after them properly. So then why do you deserve to live? So he is teaching us what is actual Dharma. You are very much puffed up with pride and have become almost insane. Presently you have assumed the form of a cow by your mystic powers. Nonetheless, I shall cut you into small pieces like grain, and I will uphold the entire population by my personal mystic powers. So now he is answering her argument that if you kill me, the earth will fall into the Garbhagaka ocean. But he is telling her that I am God. So if I kill you, I will maintain the earth. I will keep the earth in orbit. Prabhupada explains in the purport that Krishna is keeping all of the planets in orbit. So Maharaj Prithu is an empowered incarnation. He can hold the earth in orbit. And the final verse for tonight. At this time, Prithu Maharaj became exactly like Yamaraj, and his whole body appeared very angry. In other words, he was anger personified. After hearing him, the planet Earth began to tremble. She surrendered and with folded hands began to speak as follows. So Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport that we can never challenge Krishna's authority. So it is better to just surrender to him. Because Prabhupada explains there have been many atheistic, materialistic people over many centuries who have challenged Krishna's authority. But all of them have faced Krishna in the shape of cruel death. So therefore, now Prabhupada says that we should be intelligent. Now you cannot challenge Krishna's authority. It's better that you cooperate and surrender to Krishna. Better to be a good child, a good citizen, and receive his protection and his shelter, instead of being defiant and then having to suffer the consequences of being killed by Krishna, meeting Krishna in the form of death. So we'll stop here. Is there any more questions or comments? And we'll continue the chapter next Monday. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.